all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
7:06 on a Friday morning, September 8th, 2023. Welcome back to Up North News Radio. On this September 8th, International Literacy Day, World Physical Therapy Day, National Actors Day, National 401k Day, National Ampersand Day, National Stand Up to Cancer Day. Coming up this hour, the right way to do tax relief. We will talk to State Assembly Representative Mike Baer of Verona about Democrats offering alternatives to the Republican plan of tax cuts for the very rich. The Democratic alternative is to expand the homestead and the earned income tax credits so that working middle-class families benefit from the state's record budget surplus. We will also talk a bit about a new Workers First agenda, a new package of bills introduced by Democratic legislators this week. We'll talk to Mark Jacob, a former editor at the Chicago Tribune and author, about media coverage of this week's national stories. We'll talk a little sports with Dan Schumacher as well. You can join us anytime here on the phone, 844-967-2789. Again, 844-967-2789. If you missed us last hour, where we talked about the national media attention on Republicans who are trying to nullify a Wisconsin State Supreme Court election, well, you can catch that show a couple of different ways. You can head over to the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. You can also subscribe to the show as a podcast through Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We would love to have you do that. You can also, though, because we run live video feeds of this show on several different Facebook pages, you can also go to that Facebook page or Twitter page or YouTube page, and you can watch the show back again. On Facebook, we are on Up North News' webpage. Look for Up North News WI. Don't forget the WI. Civic Media, the Tap FM here in Chippewa Falls, and the Up North News YouTube channel are just some of the places where you can catch us anytime on demand along the way. You can catch our newsletter by subscribing at upnorthnewswi.com. And if you do that, you're going to see my editorial today on the good choices that Democrats are facing in Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District, and contrast that with the not really great slate of choices that Republicans have so far in their presidential primary. And Christina Lorre has put articles in the newsletter about it being early fall and, you know, some apple orchards that you could visit and what is going to be what are going to be some of the things you want to get at farmers markets at about this time of year. In sports, the Milwaukee Brewers were off yesterday, traveling to New York. They are in the Bronx to take on the New York Yankees for a weekend series and try to maintain a slimming lead in the National League Central Division. The Wisconsin Badger football team is at Washington State. That's tomorrow evening, and you can catch that game on stations all across the Civic Media Radio Network, WRJN in Racine, WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids, WLAK in Amory, WRCE in Richland Center, and Badger football games are streamed on the Civic Media app. And to get it, all you need to do is go to one of those stations on the app and listen to that stream. So, for example, you would go to WRJN in Racine, say that you want to listen to that station through the app, and you will catch Badger football that way. All right, Democrats, I mentioned, we're going to talk to Mike Baer in a minute about some tax credits that have been introduced, but another thing that's been introduced by some of the legislators has been something called a Workers First package. It would reinstate collective bargaining for public employees so that Wisconsin workers can once again have a say in their wages and their hours and conditions of employment. This package would make it easier for Wisconsin workers to organize together and take away some union-busting rules that were put in place over the past few years. It would prevent wage discrimination against women and certain other classes of folks. It would allow local governments to have more of a say on matters regarding minimum wage and family medical leave. And what I mean by that is that Republicans, the alleged party of local control, actually got control of the legislature and were suddenly no longer the party of local control. They saw some progressive places like Madison, Eau Claire, and elsewhere looking to institute higher minimum wages and better working conditions, and they put the kibosh on that and said, nope, we, the big government of the state, know better than you. I know we said we were for local control, but it turns out we really weren't. And this package of bills would once again allow local governments to have more of a say on matters that go on in their own boundaries. The executive director of A Better Wisconsin Together, Chris Wallach, says right now workers across the state are unduly suffering due to years of right-wing politicians playing partisan politics instead of siding with Wisconsin workers. With this bill package, Wisconsin would take a step in the right direction. And State Representative Katrina Shanklin of Stevens Point says that from the historic UPS deal that the Teamsters secured to Local 662's recently ratified contracts at Leinenkugel's and New Dairy Select Milk, they've shown us that workers are not backing down from a fight. Strike actions are up nearly 50%. And an overwhelming majority of Americans support unions. That was some polling that we talked about with Kia Vakil last week. So there you see how Democrats are trying to do more for workers now as far as getting them a tax cut from this record surplus. We'll talk to Representative Mike Baer right after our weatherology forecast, which is coming up after this break. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this beautiful Friday morning, when you're here, you're up north. We'll be right back. As I mentioned, Jimmy Rogers is mentioned in this tune. Jimmy Rogers was born on this day in 1897. Time for our weatherology forecast and see how things are looking as we head into the weekend. It's one that sure started not even warm. It started very hot, and yet I was wearing a light jacket yesterday because I still had the top down on the Jeep. So let's see how things are looking as we head into the weekend with meteorologist Jennifer Vucicki from Weatherology, who has all the details there. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Happy Friday. Yeah, it looks like today some cloud cover for the southern part of the state today, Milwaukee over to Madison, then becoming mostly sunny for everyone else. Slightly warmer compared to yesterday, with highs in the mid to low 70s for Wisconsin Rapids and the western half of the state. A little cooler in the upper 60s from Wausau down to Madison and for the eastern half of the state. Saturday, it looks like a warm front pushes through west central Wisconsin, so starting off sunny around Amory and Baldwin. Then an increase in cloud cover with a slight chance for showers and storms in the afternoon hours. Otherwise, sunny skies for everyone else tomorrow. A little warmer overall as that warm front comes in. Temperatures all over the place, though, tomorrow. The warmest spot will be around about Richland Center with highs in the low 80s, mid to upper 70s for central and west central Wisconsin, then mid to low 70s for the south. Chance for those showers and storms coming in by the evening hours or late night hours from Wausau down to Richland Center and for that western part of the state. Sunday, it'll be a little bit split, actually. That warm front pushes through the southern part of the state finally on Sunday, so slightly warmer for Madison, Waukesha, and Milwaukee, highs in the mid-70s with partial sunshine developing. Chance for rain by the evening hours. Then a cold front will come in directly behind this warm front for the rest of the state on Sunday. So cooler temperatures overall for everyone else, mid to upper 60s, around 70 from Oshkosh and north of that. Then the warmest spot behind that cold front will be for southwestern Wisconsin. Chance for rain for those cooler locations as well on Sunday. Then on Monday, a quick peek at the new work week. It looks like cooler for everyone, in the 60s mostly, below average for this time of the year. A chance for some rain for all.
I feel like we should be playing Earth, Wind, and Fire because now it definitely feels like September. Jennifer, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
You too.
And Representative Mike Baer joins us now. Representative Baer, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Morning, Pat. Thanks for having me.
Hey, now as we look ahead to a potential fall legislative session, we are looking at still quite a chasm between things that Governor Evers proposed earlier in the year, things that Republicans proposed that Governor Evers vetoed. A lot of the discussion on this show has been about, you know, finding the right fit for this thing or that thing. And, you know, part of what you're talking about is, well, first start with the earned income tax credit. Can you describe a bit about it and why why you're introducing it again. Why is it a priority?
Well, Pat, chasm is a very good word for how things operate around here generally on just about every issue, as you know. And that may even be putting it lightly, especially on an issue like this, where there is such a wide gap between position of the governor and Democrats and the Republicans. Just the other day, the governor issued a veto threat on the latest plan that the Republicans had on tax cuts, primarily for the wealthy. And that's just not the direction that that we think we should be going right now. So I'm happy that I joined a couple of colleagues earlier this week to introduce two bills, one on expanding the state's earned income tax credit and the other on expanding the homestead credit, which helps people stay in their homes and afford rent. That's the kind of common sense, reasonable tax cuts that we ought to be doing right now when we have a massive state budget surplus, the largest in state history. We're in the best financial position we've ever been in. And what the Republicans have proposed is just not a sustainable path forward. So what we ought to be doing is putting that money into the pockets of working people, those who are struggling the most to make ends meet, feed their kids, get them school supplies, and pay rent.
So instead of a tax cut that's geared toward those highest tax brackets, for folks who aren't making a low enough income to have ever been exposed to the earned income tax credit, how does that work compared to, say, just a straight tax cut for the wealthy? What happens if you're below a certain income level in Wisconsin?
Right. Well, the earned income tax credit is a federal credit for one thing. And what we have is a state supplement to that that helps low income workers who have an income be able to expand and make the work that they have pay more. And it's a program that, you know, was a tax credit that was first signed by President Reagan, has been spoken fondly about by former Speaker Paul Ryan, and it enjoyed a significant amount of bipartisan support in history up until rather recently. And you know, Governor Walker's first budget cut the earned income tax credit, and it's something that is helpful to workers, it's helpful to people who have incomes, and we really ought to be increasing it. You know, those who aren't working, we've certainly done a lot to try to help increase programmings like transitional job programs that help people get into the workforce and start making a paycheck that would help them get access to things like the earned income credit and be able to afford those things again, the basics, putting food on the table, being able to pay rent or make a car payment, the things that people are struggling with right now that, you know, they might be thinking, I have to take on a second job because I can't afford the bills that are coming in right now. And that's just not the position that someone working full time ought to be in, especially if they have kids.
Well, and you really put your finger on it from the beginning of that response when you talked about lower income workers. We are talking about workers here, wage earners, yeah, but whose wages are really low. You know, they're maybe making more than minimum wage. I mean, I sure hope so, because that hasn't been raised in a gazillion years, but they're still making a low enough wage that by boosting the earned income tax credit, like you said, you get more bang for your buck out there in the local economy where lower income working families have to spend their money.
Right. Yeah, you're right. The state's minimum wage hasn't been raised from $7.25. In a number of years, while every state around us has increased it significantly. The effective minimum wage, you know, what employers are actually paying, what people are actually making, is something more than $10, which is still not enough and still not caught up to what other states have been doing. And what the earned income credit does, what the homestead credit does, is just allow the amount that you're making already to stretch a little bit farther. And the hope is that that's the difference between being evicted and going hungry.
And that's really, I mean, we could get into the numbers, into the weeds of the whole thing, but really by the rather modest boost of the Wisconsin share of the earned income tax credit, you're talking about making that difference in rent payments, right, or to a grocery bill. But, speaking of rent and housing, let's turn now to the homestead tax credit, which, sure, again, is something that Governor Evers proposed increasing earlier in the year. Again, Republicans did not go along with it. And so once again, this is something that you're proposing as we head into the fall session. So tell folks a little bit about what the homestead tax credit does and why it's worth increasing the income ceiling for it.
Sure. So income tax filers who make up to a certain amount are allowed to claim this homestead credit, which allows them to pay for rent or for the mortgage and essentially keep them in their homes. The goal is to keep them in their homes. This is something that a number of seniors in particular rely on to keep their roof over their house, the house that they probably owned for decades. And they may be struggling because of being on a fixed income and the rates of inflation going through the roof, that they might not be able to stay under that roof anymore. So it's a credit that also has had bipartisan support in the past, and I'm hopeful we can get to that point again. And one that just makes a lot of sense, not just for the people living in the home, but if they're renting, this is something that landlords should be supporting too. Same with realtors, same with bankers. This helps people pay the rent and pay the mortgage, and it's good for the bottom line of the landlords, of the bankers, of the people who are on the other side. So I'm hopeful that there will be some movement on this. Again, it's a common sense, reasonable thing to do when we have a massive tax or revenue surplus in the state budget, is give some of that money back to those who are struggling the most. And this is something that keeps a roof over people's head, which, you know, used to be something that wasn't as bipartisan and subject to that chasm that you mentioned at the outset, as it is now. We shouldn't be having arguments over whether a child should be homeless or not. That's something we know we can solve, and something that we can help by just giving folks a little bit more money and stretching the amount that they make on their paychecks to be able to cover what their expenses are.
And so again, you've got a cost of living since 2010 that's gone up 40%. This homestead tax credit hasn't gone up at all since then. So you're raising the maximum income amount from about $25,000 to $35,000. So again, this is targeted tax relief, not targeted for the people making $435,000, but $35,000 who, again, this was once upon a time a bipartisan goal that everybody would have home ownership. It strikes me just as so odd that we are having, I don't want to say a debate, because it's not actually a debate, but with Republicans in the legislature saying that we can't do something about child care counts because, you know, there might be some child care providers, you know, with higher incomes, and why should they get a benefit? I mean, it all feels like such a smokescreen. You can't smokescreen a $35,000 income and helping make sure that they can pay the rent.
Right. Yeah. And you know, if you contrast what I'm talking about here, with my colleagues, you know, Senator Spreitzer, Senator Royce, who are working on this with me, Representative Reamer, if you contrast what these tax credits do for people who are making less than $35,000 in the case of the homestead credit, with what the Republicans wanted to do in their state budget, which was give the 11 top tax filers making $75 million or more a tax cut of $1.8 million a year. It's such a, that chasm is so broad between those numbers and who the relief is targeted to. You know, it's puzzling to me. I wish we weren't at this point where we were having the debate or non-debate about this, or the just sort of stuck in the trenches and not moving anywhere. These are common sense, reasonable things when we have $7 billion in the surplus that we ought to be able to prioritize and do.
And look, maybe there is some kind of middle ground, or maybe some kind of a deal that comes up in the fall session, but we can't get into that without first explaining the differences. And Representative Mike Baer, thank you very much for explaining the difference from the Democratic perspective on these two very important, very essential tax breaks that people at the lower end of the spectrum, the working families of Wisconsin, would benefit from. Representative Baer, thanks so much.
Thank you, Pat. Happy to do it, and hope you have a wonderful weekend.
All right. Thank you. So again, to reinforce that last point, there has not been a lot of motion between Democrats and Republicans in the legislature since the state budget bill was finished and signed and Governor Evers made his partial vetoes for it. So think of this fall session as going into what should be a negotiating session. And what you really have had the past couple of weeks here are the two sides essentially restating their opening positions or their original positions, however you want to call it. And now we look to see if there's some room to actually get some work done. Now, to do that may mean compromises that are unpalatable to some. Look at the amount of money that went into voucher schools in order for more money to go into public schools. So nobody should be expecting a complete win, and maybe not even a win-win, but some kind of productivity on a record surplus to help with childcare and to help middle-class families would be a very good thing. We'll talk to Mark Jacob coming up right after this break. You're up north.
I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. I'm crazy, crazy for feeling so blue.
Patsy Cline was born this day 91 years ago, passed away far too early in 1963, and has given us a song and a title that is as utilitarian as it gets when we are discussing news and politics with our friend Mark Jacob. Mark, how are you?
Doing great.
All right. You have a new article at CourierNewsroom.com. Courier Newsroom is the parent company of Up North News and is a separate entity from Civic Media. But the column there is a subject that we have brought up a couple of times, and we're going to bring it up again because it keeps happening. The title of the article is "The New York Times Has a Serious Headline Problem." Tell us more about it.
Yeah, I mean, I've been noticing, you know, over years, really, but especially, it doesn't seem to get better, that the New York Times tends to, the way I put it is that they're like sanding down the sharp edges of right-wing extremism. Here's an example. The New York Times wrote, I think, a very good editorial last week talking about how right-wing extremists, and they called them right-wing extremists, are blocking funding of a global AIDS program to kind of prevent AIDS overseas. The U.S. has funded this for a couple decades, and it was really bipartisan back when, you know, George W. Bush was in charge. But the Republicans are blocking it now, the right-wingers. So the New York Times writes this really strong editorial saying this is terrible. We need to pass this. And their headline is, "Partisan Politics Puts a Huge Win for Public Health at Risk." So the enemy here, the villain, is partisan politics. It's not the Republicans, it's not extremists, it's not right-wing extremists. They put it on politics, which is a very vague thing. And the real the tendency for the New York Times is to not identify the wrongdoers, but to just vaguely say that either everyone or nobody is at fault. And it's just this safe place that the New York Times goes to avoid making anyone mad, I guess, but also to avoid making any real point.
Well, right. And then it feeds into essentially that doom loop, if you will, the national psyche that all things political are bad. All things government is bad. When it takes away from all of the people who are trying to perform good public service, citizenship, civic engagement, whatever you want to call it, that's still out there. But it's always so easy to take the pot shot at politics overall, politicians overall, dysfunction overall. But that's fine for comedians. Comedians can do that. I think we should expect better from actual reporting on these matters.
You know, and also, this is especially true in the economy. I believe that the New York Times wants to look like it's really smart and savvy and sophisticated, and therefore it's got to take a negative spin on everything. Because if it wrote an article saying, hey, the economy's doing pretty darn well, everyone, the reporters and the editors are worried that other people would think they're being too candy-assed or something. I don't know. I think that they end up being so smart and sophisticated that they go negative on everything. And I have some examples in my article. You know, here's three headlines. Why a strong U.S. economy is making stock investors jittery. Against the odds, the U.S. economy chugs along as fears linger. Inflation has been easing fast, but wild cards lie ahead. Well, come on, Pat. Always there are fears in the economy. Always there are wild cards in the economy. Investors are always jittery. This isn't news. This is just their attempt to just kind of throw shade on what is really a good positive news story about the economy.
Mm-hmm. And again, it just feeds a cycle that helps create content, but doesn't actually get to what's objective. And it puts it then on, let's say in this instance, Democratic candidates and politicians to acknowledge, because they don't want to look, you know, Pollyanna, to say, yeah, there's still problems with inflation in some instances. I see gas prices spiking again, but it's national news outlets that need to add the context that
right.
Saudi Arabia is the one raising gas prices, not Joe Biden.
Right.
And Saudi Arabia happens to be very cozy with Donald Trump and the Republicans these days.
Exactly. And also just to point out more often that while inflation is a lingering problem that's come down, you know, dramatically, but it's still too high, it's lower than in almost every industrialized country in the world. I mean, the whole world, you know, got socked in the eye with this pandemic, and you know, had to spend money to try to save their economies, and you know, that fueled inflation. But the U.S. is doing a clearly better job than the rest of the world at handling this. And does Biden get any credit? No, you get these polls that come out, this goofy Wall Street Journal poll, you know, that says that 3/4 of people polled said that inflation was getting worse. Well, I mean, according to the statistics, the actual numbers, inflation is getting better. And whose fault is that when you get that kind of result? It's not, you know, New York Times, and in the article I point out, New York Times talks about how Biden is struggling to get his economic message out. Well, he's struggling because the news media is struggling. It's the news media that's falling short here. There's really very little looking in the mirror happening with the major news media these days.
No, and by the way, while we're talking about polling, we're going to talk in a second about how it's just too early for a lot of this. But whenever you read a poll, it is very important to be mindful of the fine print and of methodology. And I don't know the person whose tweet got all this attention. Their bio says that they're like a Democratic strategist of some sort. And it's a tough way to learn a lesson. But he looked at this one of these recent polls, and he looked at the sampling of the poll. He rushed to judgment, and a whole lot of folks, yourself included, had to say, hey, don't be lipping off about poll numbers until you actually know what's behind the numbers. Can you explain what the problem was in this instance?
I think a lot of people don't really understand what oversampling is. And so let me explain. This poll, you want to do a poll, let's say, of you know, who's going to vote for who in the election in November 2024. So in that case, you can poll Democrats, Republicans, and Independents. You can poll everyone who's going to vote. And so they do that. But if they want to do in that same poll, if they want to figure out what people think about who they're going to vote for in the Republican race for the nomination, then they've got to exclude the Democrats and the Independents, and they've got to focus on the Republicans. When they do that, sometimes the sample size is too small to where they would not get good results. So they do what they call oversampling, which means they would ask a bunch of Republicans, more Republicans, to say who they were. They would ask them all the questions, frankly, but they would oversample Republicans in order to get a much better result on Republican-only questions. Now, when that was disclosed in a recent poll that CNN ran, some Democratic guy just got all appalled and said, hey, they're putting more Republicans in the poll. No, what they did is, after they got those Republican results, they weighted them. They said, all right, Republicans are, let's say, 35% of the population, so 35% of the results will use the results we got from this oversampling of Republicans. So the final result in the November 2024, race was not, it was not like stuffed with the Republicans. It was not some sort of grand conspiracy. But, you know, Pat, understanding polls is important, but also not trusting polls or believing polls is important too. I mean, we're 14 months out. Why are all these news organizations spending so much time talking about the polls? In recent years, it's been shown that a lot of polls are not right. And also, it's been shown that there's great movement in presidential races over years, over the last few months, or even, I mean, as I say, 14 months out.
You noted in a post you put up this morning, being 14 months away, and noting that at this very point in 1992, George H.W. Bush had a 67% approval rating, and you put up a Boston Globe snippet that the headline was, Democrats see slim prospects for Oval Office. So foul is the mood in Democratic drawing rooms that some party professionals are joking that if Democrats held a national presidential primary today, President Bush would be their nominee. Well, Bush ended up getting only, what, 37.5% of the vote.
Well, Ross Perot got into, you know, Bush became increasingly unpopular because of his, no new taxes pledge, that read my lips stuff that turned out to be a lie. And Ross Perot got in, took a lot of the votes from him. Bill Clinton got in, and Bill Clinton seemed like a fresh new face, and he won. So a guy who was, and you know, that 67% is from 14 months before. Bush was up to like 90% at one point, a little bit earlier. So it's things change in American politics. I mean, this idea that, oh, well, you know, it's clearly going to be,
Howard Dean. It's going to be Howard Dean. Yeah, it's going to exactly. be Rudy Giuliani. It's going to be Chris Christie, you know, in past cycles. No, it's not.
Right. Or that 999 guy.
Kane. Herman Cain.
I mean, I think for a week he was leading in the polls. Mm-hmm. I mean, in that race. I mean, it just moves around, and different polls find different things. And just a basic thing about polling is that it's become a greater challenge. You know, when everyone had a phone, you know, sitting in, you know, on their kitchen wall or something, it was a lot easier to poll people than it is now. People don't pick up the phone when you call, and you know, cell phones have changed things, and behaviors change things, and a lot of people just don't want to answer polls. They don't want to answer phone calls. They don't want to answer polls even if they answered the phone calls. And that it's not the same types of people who say no at the same rate. So you get this. So it's kind of, polling's a nightmare now. But the thing about it, Pat, if polling's a nightmare, why don't they do a lot less of it? Is my view of it. But no, they don't. Because it's just ready. It's numbers. It's facts. It must be true because it's real numbers.
Right.
No, it's numbers of like 500 people you called at random. It's goofy.
It's tougher than ever to get that kind of a sample size. I know, having commissioned a poll as a candidate myself, they're more expensive than ever because you have to make more calls than ever. But we should also note that while it is an inexact science, is putting it kindly, but there is still a science behind weighted sampling and things like that. So at least put more stock into something where credible people are at least trying to take the pulse of the country than some of these junk polls that you see out there. And that too, again, is on newsrooms to point out, you know, the difference between those.
Right, like Rasmussen. If you ever see a poll by Rasmussen, that's just a kind of a right-wing operation that is constantly wrong, but constantly is boosted in kind of the right-wing kind of echo chamber. So if you see a poll by them, just don't believe it. It's wrong.
Yeah. How did you, I'm sure you saw the letter from District Attorney Fannie Willis to Congressman Jim Jordan. For trying to basically, she called it out, said you are trying to have Congress interfere with our investigation of President Trump. And her letter was a true smackdown, one that was refreshing, I have to say.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, generally, I like it when prosecutors ignore that kind of stuff. So, and she's been pretty good at staying above the fray politically. But this is, you know, he's directly trying to interfere in a local prosecution, you know, which is just outrageous and totally not his job. Mm-hmm. And that's what she pointed out. Yeah. And, you know, I have great respect for her. I think she's in an extremely difficult situation, handling an incredibly complicated thing and being very focused and very, she's being a real grown up about it. And mm-hmm. So, you know, Jim Jordan's never grown up. I mean,
no.
I mean, the people who voted for him in his district, I mean, what are they getting for that? All he's doing is grandstanding all the time on goofy stuff. Does he help them with anything? Does he pass any bills? I don't think so. He's just a mess. And it's just so disappointing when people like that get elected.
Yeah. So, and that's why getting a public rebuke is not bad in my book. I got 30 seconds here just to get your take on the increasing national attention that's coming to Wisconsin over Republican efforts to essentially nullify a Supreme Court election.
Well, it's good that there's national attention, you know, and which probably will lead to, you know, more contributions to Wisconsin Democrats who are, you know, really do a strong job, in my opinion. And it's one of the best run organizations of Democrats in the country, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And so it's good that the attention is going. I mean, because this is, if this happens in Wisconsin, it's outrageous. If it happens nationwide, it's all over. This is just not democracy.
You need to nip something like this in the bud. Exactly. Mark Jacobs' new column is at couriernewsroom.com. Look for it there, along with more that he does for us. Mark, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
You too.
All right. When we come back, we'll talk to Dan Schumacher a bit. It's Bears week for Packers. And I'm telling you, if you're rooting for the Bears, if you're thinking the Cubs are going to catch the Brewers, well, Patsy Cline ain't the only one here who's crazy. We'll be back. You're up north.
I had a hard run running from your window.
Dan Schumacher's here, so what dead tune are we learning today?
That is Bertha.
Okay.
Ding, ding, ding.
Aaron, you're never going to be able to stump him. I mean, keep trying.
I know.
No, I actually, we're rather impressed. Anyway, Dan Schumacher joins us from Northland College up in Ashland. We'll talk a little sports here because a kid who grew up in Chicago bars is probably a little happy with, you know, Bears season is opening up and, you know, the Cubs are still chasing the Brewers. But I want to start with this. You can't see my computer screen, but we have something called Slack because we're scattered all over the country. All of us at Courier Newsroom and Up North News are scattered around Wisconsin. And on some of these chats, I get a little note in the corner of my screen. Well, I put a note up in the fantasy football one about one of the Kansas City Chiefs who did not, shall we say, did not have a stellar first game. It says here, Kadarius Toney finished with one receiving yard, -1 rushing yards, 4 drops, one of them leading to a pick six that KC lost by 1 point. It legitimately might go down as the worst performance any skill player has all season. And all I'm getting on my screen now, Dan, is all of the trash talk across the Courier Newsroom Fantasy Football League about one player and one game. And that just tells you people are ready for the NFL to be back.
No doubt. I mean, it's the first game of the year. I was having a conversation with people in my office, and who did you like? I actually like Detroit Lions to win the division. So for them to go on the road and get a 1-point victory down versus Kansas City, you know, Super Bowl contenders, I thought was pretty impressive. But yeah, that guy had a bad night.
But you know, a lot of them did. There was a lot there. And I said earlier in the program, and I probably mentioned this a year ago, you know, football can't have a genuine preseason because of the contacts and everything else. They're not playing flag football in the preseason, but it's not the same. And so those first, I would contend, 3 games of the season, it's almost, you almost wish there was never a division game in there, because that's where you do see,
right,
to put it politely, the kinks are being worked out, you know?
I agree with you on that. I thought in the last collective bargaining agreement with them that they were going to shorten up. They compromised. I thought they were going to shorten it up but lengthening the season. Mm-hmm. So adding 2 more games to the season, less 2 games in the preseason. But they only went to 3 preseason games with 1 extra regular season game. I just think, you know, the preseason is about the guys that are trying to make the team, that are trying to make the last 15 spots on the roster, you know. And, you know, you're not going to see an Aaron Rodgers. You're not going to see a Justin Fields playing in these games. It's not worth it. And when they do, then the people are outraged that a player got hurt. A starter got hurt in a preseason game. So there's so many arguments to it, but in the end, it's the first week of the season. Detroit won, and on to the Bears-Packer game, 3:25 on Sunday.
Yeah, there will be some attention paid to it. It is a division game to kick off the season, and I think it's fair to say, question marks all around. You know, Jordan Love, of course, is the biggest one. What will he come out of the gate strong? You know, will he be able to say, what his two predecessors said in Rodgers and Favre, to essentially look at Bears fans like you in the eye and say, I own you.
Yeah.
Will Jordan Love be able to bring out that same emotion in you, Dan, as Favre and Rodgers did?
Well, if it happens again, another Hall of Famer, three Hall of Famers in a row, I might switch teams.
Wow. Good thing I'm recording this. Jeez.
But, you know, I still have hope for this weekend for gaining a game or tying it up with the Brewers, though, with the Cubs.
Yeah, I mean, the Brewers, they'd won nine in a row, and now they've lost five of their last eight, and so there's going to be drama all the way through. Pull up my little paper schedule here. Somebody still has to have these on their refrigerator, and so I'm one of them. So they're in the Bronx. Brewers taking on the Yankees tonight, and then tomorrow afternoon and Sunday afternoon. Then they're home for four games against Miami, Monday through Thursday. And then the Washington Nationals come to town. So that's seven games at home that the Brewers should not be dropping. I'm not saying they should win them all. But, you know, when you go to Pittsburgh and lose two out of three, that's not a good sign. And that only helps the Cubs' odds.
That's right. I really believe it's going to come down to that last series. And I think, isn't the last series with the Cubs?
It is. After
it's a four. Is it a four-game series?
It is a three-game series. Oh. But they come out of that next week's homestand. They go to St. Louis for four games. Now, St. Louis has had a terrible year, but it's still these are still division games.
Right.
So it's four in St. Louis, then three in Miami. Then they come home to wrap up the season with three at home against St. Louis and three at home against the Chicago Cubs. So, I mean, it's coming down to the wire. And we've seen tiebreaker games before. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, that would be fun, wouldn't it? That would make life interesting.
Wait, I don't know. I'm getting to an age where I worry about ulcers and things like that.
I'm still trying to figure out what Bear jersey I'm going to wear on Sunday.
Oh, what are your choices?
I got Buckus, I got Jim McMahon, I got Walter Payton. I just don't know. I know they're going to be doing something with Buckus at either he's flipping the coin or something like that. He's honorary captain. I know that. I just read that online. So
I think you go Buckus. Buckus is the way to go. I think you open up the season with a classic.
Yeah. But he's not really bad either, though.
I'll be curious to see just again how Jordan Love comes out, and is everybody in a Love jersey by the end of the season? Does Christian Watson, does he recover from whatever is nagging him and bust out, or Aaron Jones? There's a lot of potential out there. College football wise, the Badgers are playing at Washington State tomorrow night. Catch that game on the Civic Media Radio Network on WRJN in Racine, WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids, WLAK in Amory, and WRCE in Richland Center. If you go to the Civic Media app and you call up any one of those stations, like WRJN and Racine, you'll be able to listen to the Badger football game. It'll be streamed on the Civic Media app. Going to be another good weekend for college football.
Yep. Everybody's opening up. I mean, everybody is playing. So we'll be, by the time we get to Monday, football season will be in full swing, both pro and college. And, you know, looking forward to see what the Badgers look like against real competition, in my opinion. You know, Washington State is a Pac-10 team. I don't know what you call it. It's Pac-10 or whatever.
Pac-2, whatever's left there. Yeah.
They're going to be wind up with left out of the whole deal as an independent then.
I know. This whole thing's going to be such a mess. Yeah, so we'll just enjoy the game instead. So, yes. All right. Have a great day up there. We'll talk to you later, Dan.
Talk to you.
See
you.
All right. We will see you. Have a very wonderful start to the weekend. Coming up on Monday, we're going to have our friends here from Motherhood for Good talking about Gun Violence Prevention Day of Action that is coming up. And a special guest, a pediatric clinical care physician, a critical care physician at the Medical College of Wisconsin, to help us inform us that far too many people, especially kids, are losing their lives to gun violence. That's coming up on Monday. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday morning, 6 a.m.